This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I hope you get to say the line. Punch your wife in the face. Do you get to say it out loud?
I do.
Excellent.
I do. I'm lucky. I have some very good lines.
How much of that backstory between you and Scott do we get to see? Because in the comics,
there's a lot of backstory.
Do they get to fit that in, or is that just going to not be able to fit that in?
Not really fit in. Like, the Scott exes are sort of less part of the story than the Ramona exes. So although it's hinted at and, you know, we get some of it sort of inferred, we don't really flash back to high school.
Is there anything particularly you wish had been left in that was cut?
The knives make out. my sister and, like, I grew up in Toronto, and my sister and I just went to the regular Sunday night show at Sneaky D's, and I wish we had Sneaky D's in there. We have so many other great Toronto landmarks, but Sneaky D's is missing.
And the nachos.
I didn't know the comic at all, which is really funny, but because I grew up here and I had friends who worked at all of the places, like The Beguiling, which is a store here, and you know, at Suspect Video, and like one of my friends actually worked at Suspect and The Beguiling. So like, it's kind of crazy that I didn't, that I'd never known the books before.
Obviously, having grown up in Toronto, you've seen it used as so many other things in films.
Yes.
Is it refreshing for you to actually see something that honors Toronto and the club culture and all of that?
It's wonderful. It's amazing. I mean, we have such a great music scene and art scene, and there's just a great group of young people, you know, temping their way through their 20s doing other amazing things. I spent like 10 years working here without ever having been shooting in Toronto, and it's so frustrating because it's a great city. And I remember seeing Montreal actually used as Montreal in that Ed Norton, Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And I love seeing that because they're great, interesting cities in and of themselves. So I'm looking forward to actually being able to use it as itself instead of being a bad New York.
Right.
there's a real cult. A lot of fans that really dig her. What is it about her, you think, that really appeals to people?
She's angry at a lot and doesn't like people. I think a lot of people can relate to that. especially, like, just, you know, within the indie music scene, like, you know, we all hated high school, and so it's... We sort of have giant chips on our shoulders, and I think a lot of people who find Scott Pilgrim will find that definitely relatable.
Since Kim is the drummer for Sex Bomb, you have to learn to drum, or did you already know how?
I learned to drum, okay. I'm very excited today. Well, first of all, I learned when I was in New York, I sort of did some prepping with just learning basic stuff, like beating my couch next to my drum teacher, who's this incredible guy named Charlie Drayton. And then we came here for 3 weeks of band rehearsal with Chris Murphy. And I grew up in Toronto during Sloan's heyday, so like, I was like, oh my God, Chris Murphy's teaching me how to play the drums. Oh my God. So that was pretty cool. And today, I'm not working really, so I just brought my sticks, and I have a drum bunker set up in this concrete studio space. And Brian, who's Beck's keyboardist, we're just going to get to jam for a while, because I'm kind of getting tired of playing the same songs. Because I didn't really learn how to drum anything beyond the songs I play in the movie, because nobody was really interested in, you know, teaching me, like, how to really play. They're like, just make sure you know the songs and that you don't look like an ass. I'm like, good, yeah, we'll cover that first. But now I actually love it, and I want to get better at it.
Yeah, I figured you're playing to Miami to play back too much. I mean, if they actually had the band, the guys, the actors play music, how would it be listenable, or if they actually band was playing?
Yeah, I mean, our first rehearsals, well, Mark...
I know Michael plays.
Michael plays and Johnny plays. We've had some odd jamming sessions, including this. We went to Chris Murphy's studio, and Johnny insists on plugging in this weird red, like, flashing, you know, police light. It's just like this little strobe. So we plug that in and just play. We're not... I think we would be around the same level as Sex Bob-omb as imagine it.
Did you come to any of these jam sessions as a DVD extra or anything?
I think some of our... I mean, when we first started rehearsing, we really didn't listen to the playback. We just... played the songs ourselves. It was only in sort of the third week that we really had to focus on like where the exact fills are so that I'm not like going and there's nothing on the track. So I actually have a Chris Murphy commentary track when we're shooting, and we have nicknames for all of our special fills. So it'll be like Maxwell, 1, 2, 1, 2. And then I have to do the fill. They're a weird little... The mother. The half-mother.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Those girls had names. I guess we do now.
Yeah.
I thought you gave the best performance this year on In Treatment. It absolutely floored me. I wanted to know what it's like to just be able to focus on creating a character. And I wanted to know what it's like with working with Gabriel Byrne, who has to work in every single episode, all 40.
He's exhausted. and he has, like, we shoot every episode in 2 days.
Oh, really?
So he doesn't get to do that much prep. So he has screens placed around my head with all the words flying by.
Oh, wow.
So he has to read, because, you know, we're shooting 22 pages in 2 days. There's no way that you can... learn 22 pages every 2 days that I know of. But it was really interesting. I got to know the playwright who wrote my storyline and who also last year did the gymnast storyline. I think she's pretty incredible.
I think
that was genius. That was my favorite one from last year.
Yeah,
she's for Alice.
Yeah.
For which?
She's doing Alice in Wonderland for Tim Burton now.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Oh, the actress. Yeah. That's going to be awesome. I just saw some stills from that.
Which was the playwright that did... Because they had such a great writing bench on that show.
Yeah, her name is Sarah Treen. And she's doing another thing for HBO right now. She gets back to New York soon. She's in L.A. it was incredible. But it was really kind of nice. I wrapped that like a Friday and flew here on, I think, a Monday or something crazy like that. So to jump from, you know, 22 pages of dialogue a day to after you visited the set, it's like for 7 hours. And we've been here since March. It's so big.
So you've been out here throughout the entire shoot so far?
Yeah. I've taken a couple trips back home, but pretty brief. I've been mostly just here.
What's your favorite scene so far?
Well, it was funny. I mean, I feel like we've shot all these different movies. Like, when we first started, the first 2 weeks of shooting was all Stephen Still's apartment and band rehearsal. You know, and so we were, it was like this tiny little group of people and small set comparatively, and it just looked like a Toronto apartment. And then we sort of kept ramping up further and further until now we're here in this giant, like the craziest set I've ever seen with LCD crazy lights that go with the, you know, and so I would say that my favorite was just the beginning of the movie, like doing all the rehearsal stuff. It's been amazing to see the rest of it happen, but it happens so piecemeal. Like it's just, you know, and Edgar sort of has the whole movie edited in his head already. So we're just sort of matching to what he has.
So now as an actor, how is that? Because it's so meticulous and it's such precise technical work that for you to also carry a character through those scenes, is that a different discipline for you?
It is. It's funny. Like, I hope over the last 6 months, Kim hasn't changed. I don't think so. I mean, it's not like she really, you know, jumps around a lot and is, like, hyper in one scene or anything. But it's been funny to try and carry the through line. But I think the main thing is the relationship that the band has. Because we have spent now all this time together that... I think that's sort of what we keep returning to. And whenever we get to play together, it still sort of returns to that little, you know, shitty rehearsal space. So that's good.
Can you talk about the relationship with her and with her character Ramona? Because obviously they don't get along really just because of the former kind of ex and his elf from high school. So is that we see a lot of that in the movie? Is there still a lot of that kept?
Not a lot of it. I mean, I think, in my opinion, Knives is so much more irritating than like, at least Ramona's cool, you know. It's like, although I don't think they fit together, it's like, she's from New York, you know, she's pretty relaxed, she's not as annoying as a high schooler. but in terms of like the carry through of the line, you know, being Scott's ex again, it's sort of off to the side. So whatever, there are looks to Ramona, but it's all in Edgar's head, so I have to just trust him and like go, okay.
To me, you mentioned earlier that like Kim has her little cult. I think part of it is that Kim, to me, is easily the most grounded character in the books. And then for you as an actor, you're the one who is kind of the bridge to reality as everything is just progressively getting bigger and stranger as it goes. Is that a challenge for you, that you're kind of pinning things down?
Well, it's sort of funny to try and get that balance between, you know, just accepting the reality of, like, you know, my friend Satya flying in from the ceiling and the theater and, like, starting to do a dance with demon hipster chicks. Like, it's like, so how do we react when he throws fireballs? Are we surprised? Does this happen a lot? You know? It's like, so it's sort of funny. But it is nice that, you know, throughout, Kim's pretty unthrowable, you know. Not a lot is too much for much. So... it is fun in that way, but it has been a challenge to try and like bridge that gap. But hopefully we manage it. I also think that Kim is just the most likable character. I mean, Scott is like many guys his age, you know, selfish and self-centered and lazy and awesome, of course, but and you know, Stills is the most neurotic person ever, you know. So I think there is a lot to say about Kim just kind of being around and being there to offer the sarcastic remark and take everybody down when they need it.
And that's sort of, I was wondering how your character relates to Michael's, because in the books their relationship is, she sort of keeps him grounded even though he's so hyperactive. How has that come out in your scenes with him?
I think just, like, taking the piss whenever it's necessary. I mean, there's a lot of deflation that goes on. And I think that relationship is very much part of the script, thankfully. Whenever in the rehearsal room, when he's talking about Ramona, when he's talking about Knives, I think when everybody else may be excited or worried about something else, I think she's still there to be like, you're an ass. Which is essential.
I'm local as well.
Okay.
Were there any of the particular set pieces or the locations that you were particularly excited about working on? Because there's a few of them that are pretty sweet.
Well, it was so neat to play Fake Lee's Palace.
With the real Barbie.
Yeah, like, it's amazing. So, yeah, that was pretty exciting. But also just to be in a movie at Pizza Pizza with Honest Ed's in the background. Aces.
That was very surreal to be driving around town and just
start
driving
snow.
Through and Queen, yeah, and all of a sudden it's just snow everywhere around Honest Ed.
I know. I got a text from a friend on the streetcar. He's like, did you guys snow all over this intersection? I was like, yeah, sorry about that. The snow is amazing.
It was pretty believable.
Yeah. Like, usually, I've worked with potato flakes before. Less believable. And a little snowy.
So how much, I mean, since there are changes and since there are elements that are cut from Kim's backstory, how much do you reference the comic versus just sticking with how the script goes, especially knowing that the script and the comic diverge at a certain point?
Well, for all the backstory stuff and for knowing who Kim is, although it's not mentioned in the movie, it's still, you know, sort of assumed that it's the same backstory. So I can refer to the books and go back to Kim whenever I need pretty easily. Although, you know, although it's, we don't get to see a lot of it, it's still underlying all of the relationships, which I think is.
Did you get a chance to talk to Brian about the character?
Yeah. And he made these weird little, like, kindergarten drawings for each of our characters. So she sits on my mantle at home. So I have little Brian inspiration for Kim. And he and Edgar made up lists for, like, things to know about your character that were pretty awesome.
What was sort of the biggest insight that he gave you?
You know, we talked a lot. Like, he and Hope both hate most people, so I think that was like, you know, it's like, you know, using that as a sort of basis to just be like we just don't like a lot of people. I think that was the main. No, and meeting him and Hope was just awesome. She's incredible. And so just getting to hang out with them and getting to just talk to them about the writing and about Kim and getting a sense of, you know, where he was coming from and what his experience of Toronto was probably the most helpful.
It's interesting, someone was talking the other day that Scott Pilgrim isn't necessarily really autobiographical, and some people might think that it is, but Kim sounds like she might be the character that's closest to the real people. Would you say that is possibly true?
I would say it's possibly true, but I don't know. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, I get it. It's okay. Ryan, get it.
As someone who's been here pretty much, what you said from the beginning through the thing, you've seen all these other actors come in and go, what's struck you is like, wow.
It's just so amazing. One of the great things about this cast is that we've been able to take actors of relatively the same age group that would never usually meet. You know, like bridging the comedy drama world that for some reason casting directors never really want to bridge, or you get into one community and that's kind of it. And so getting to meet like Aubrey Plaza and Mae Whitman, like getting to know two awesome girls who are just kick ass. It's been nice that way, where we probably wouldn't have worked together on any other crazy project. And just like, you know, Chris Evans teaching us all to high five because he's dealing with, like, you know, non-jocks. And he's and we're like, yeah, missed. You look at the elbow. Okay, look at the, I swear, it works every time. It's amazing. You will always get a full high five. and again, like, we would never be in the same movie.
Go ahead.
So you said you were going to pursue the draft. So how far do you want to actually pursue that?
Well, I have, I play with a band in New York, or I just started. And I've just been doing like big percussion, and we've had trouble, like, I don't know, my friend who's the lead singer was just, you know, she was sort of joking about it, but now I'm kind of like, probably do that. I don't know, we'll see. It's called, her band is called Erin Hill and Her Psychedelic Space Rats. It's sci-fi lyrics and her harp, so.
So if you were playing rock band, you'd be playing on expert, not drums, is that what you're saying?
I can't play. Okay, I get kicked off the drums when I try and the notes just keep coming at you, and I'm like, ah! I can't do it. I have literally gotten booed off the stage way too many times. It's terrorizing. You know, and the rest of my bandmates just are they just tell me to get off. I'm like, I can play bass. Dun, dun, dun.
Guys, last question and we'll let her go. Anyone else? Good?
No,
good.
Cool.
Thank you so much.